This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, you're listening to Her Vantage, where we speak to women of influence and leadership. My name is Christine Wong. Today I'll be speaking to Michelle Kaith Lim, President and CEO of Institute of Corporate Directors Malaysia. Now, last year she was featured on The Breakfast Grill to discuss IACDM, and she was also on The Morning Brief recently as well. Today we're probing a little bit deeper into her career, her personal take on corporate Malaysia, and her experiences.
A little bit of background, I guess. Professionally, I come from a legal background, but most of my working life has been in the governance sphere, i.e. overseeing legal functions, obviously, corporate secretarial, compliance at the senior management level. My last posting before ICDM was as group head for corporate secretarial and general counsel for IHH Healthcare Berhad. And then I joined ICDM in July 2018 and have been here ever since, overseeing the activities of ICDM, which basically are to make boards more effective and to improve governance on boards.
Is your involvement with ICDM in particular something that you ever expected in your career trajectory?
A bit hard to say. I suppose I eventually did see myself as getting onto a board as a director myself. But I suppose I didn't really see something like this, i.e. working in the sphere of improving governance on boards itself overall, rather than within a particular company. Yeah.
And in general, as you were starting out your career, especially, you know, looking back at those early days, what was your initial experience with leadership, especially in the terms of corporate Malaysia?
I think leadership overall has evolved a lot over time. I think the requirement now compared to maybe 20 years ago has changed a lot. I mean, it's changed a lot even in this past year, to be honest. I think people require a lot of authenticity from leaders now. Not to say that leaders were not authentic before, but leaders would have to go beyond purely just performing their functions only. They needed to reach out, engage with all their stakeholders, make sure they're walking the talk, internalizing what they do, improving on their cultures, basically building up trust rather than just purely a perfunctory type of role, if you know what I mean, not just purely legal counsel, for example. So they needed to go beyond that so that people would then trust the company, trust the brand. So there's a lot of the emotional element in that. There's also, you know, from societal changes, I guess, a lot of demands now on leaders. You look at sustainability, you look at, you know, what's happened post-pandemic. There are a lot more demands, and leaders are, you know, required to be very, very agile compared to before. And I think these are quite stark changes, you know, now compared to maybe 20 years ago.
So you would say that more is expected of leaders nowadays?
Different things are expected of leaders, I think, and more the human side, not just the perfunctory side, if you know what I mean, their formal functioning side or the skill set that they have. They expect more diverse skills from leaders, you know, and the more human side to come out as well, so that you see that authenticity. I think that's expected of a lot of leaders,
right?
More so coming through in the last few months.
Interesting. And why did you decide to take your current role at ICDM?
Because I think that was a natural progression, one, towards, you know, in my career, in that sense. I was at a senior management level in the governance space. It was a natural progression, one. Two, I think, you know, if I didn't take on the role, I would have regretted it, because it was something new. It was, you know, part of the last leg of the governance initiative by the SC, part of their strategic priorities from 2017 to 2020 to instill that self-discipline. And I thought, it was a wonderful way to sort of apply my experience and my skills into improving that last leg, you know, internalizing governance. It was something which I couldn't turn down in that sense, and I thought, well, it'd be very exciting, and it was something new. Mm. So there was no legacy issues with it. You know, you would start from scratch and you start, you know, something new, which was so relevant, and it's still so relevant now. So you know, I thought, you know, it was just new and exciting, mm-hmm. really, end of the day. And really, you know, it was a natural progression for me.
Mm. And when you say, you know, internalized governance, what exactly do you mean by that?
If you look at how the SE had planned their strategic priorities, let's say starting from when the Malaysian Code of Corporate Governance came about, that was post-97 crisis, the 97 banking crisis, the regulators then came up with, you know, the code of governance, and there was a lot of regulation. So that then oversaw market discipline. It also set in place regulation. So you had good regulation in place. You had market discipline being instilled. What was lacking then was that internal discipline within corporates themselves, within directors themselves. So that was the last leg of that journey in that sense. So that's what we mean by internalizing it. So what we do is we focus on obviously training, development programs to increase competencies of boards so that they are, so that governance itself is not something that, you know, it should not be a box-ticking exercise. You shouldn't just apply what regulation says. Mm. You need to internalize it, live it. It should be part of the corporate culture. So that's what we mean by internalizing.
Right. And I think that's definitely a gap that is very present, especially for positions of leadership. And I think it can be said that a lot of people who are promoted to a leadership position or one where they are required to enforce those regulations do not necessarily excel in managing a team, even if they are very skilled in what they do. You know, what are some ideas that you have for bridging that gap?
Yeah, so in terms of skill sets and competencies, I think board members, you know, need to look. Obviously, you have your basic fiduciary, you know, skills, etc., that everyone should be familiar with. That should be your base case. As you move on, you need to see what additional skill sets you can bring to the table. You could be a marketeer. You could be, you know, in the human capital space. You could be an entrepreneur. You could be a digital person, a big data specialist, for example. These are specific skills that you bring to the table, right? But more and more now we're seeing that we need more diversity on boards, right? So that there's, you know, it brings more robust discussions to the board. You see changes in your industry, for example. You see disruption coming from outside your industry. You think out of the box. You need, you know, diversity in terms of age as well, not just skill set. You know, you want mm-hmm. younger people who are able, you know, to bring a different perspective to the board. So you need all that diversity on the board. So boards then need to bring in diverse skill sets onto the board, or they could themselves develop, you know, by opening up their minds, learning new things. You look at, you know, digitalization, you look at engaging with stakeholders. These are things you can learn and practice, you know, through time, right? But you need to pick up these things. You look at crisis management. You look at communication, you know, culture, board culture. These are things that, you know, the regulation doesn't teach you, right? Mm. You gain that from practice, or you gain that from attending programs that we run, for example, that ICDM runs to try and widen your competency skills in that sense. So this is important, and that director development journey should not end. It should be continuous. It needs to be a continuous development, not just when you're first appointed. It should be continuous throughout the years. And that is why at ICDM, besides development programs, we also emphasize on proper board evaluations being done, because board evaluations, whether they're your own internal evaluation on a yearly basis or a periodic independent evaluation, which is a slightly higher level, this then will draw out the gaps on the board and draw out, you know, what are the strengths that are needed, gaps to be filled, competencies that are required on the particular board, which the board itself may not see. So that's why you need an independent person to come in and give you that assessment. So that's why it's very important that a lot of these things are not a compliance type box ticking exercise. It needs to be meaningful. So it needs to be done with a clear intention and a clear outcome in mind. So that there's that benefit to be gained. And it's just very important that they do this continual assessment and they refresh the board, you know, so that they're always prepared for any eventuality. I mean, if you look at the pandemic, no one could have guessed this would happen and no one was prepared for it. But now we're all forced to, right? Yeah. So even more so now, I think you need that diversity to be able to deal with these sort of unexpected, you know, situations.
All right. Well, it's time to take a short break for some messages right now. But after that, I will continue speaking to Michelle about ICDM and her experiences with that. So do stay tuned to Her Vantage on BFM 89.9.
Business, finance, and music. BFM 89.9.
Her Vantage on BFM 89.9. I'm Christine Wong and I'm speaking to Michelle Kaith Lim, President and CEO of the Institute of Corporate Directors Malaysia, or ICDM for short. And before the break, we were talking about her experiences in her career and why she decided to take on her role at ICDM and her approach to corporate governance. Now, before the break, you mentioned this concept of board culture. Could you talk to me a little bit more about what you kind of want it to be?
Not so much what I want it to be, but it's something that we'd like to encourage in boards.
Yeah.
Board culture transcends into a corporate culture. So we're talking about ethics, you're talking about integrity, you're talking about how we run business, sustainability, for example. These are cultures which are very positive. A lot of them actually are very human cultures, which are then translated into the business. So it's just how a company as such should be run responsibly and with integrity. And these are sort of the positive cultures that you want, so that no one actually has to think twice when you deal with a particular company, for example, that has the right cultures. It just automatically runs through the correct processes, does the correct checks, does things ethically, does things, you know, in a sustainable way, et cetera, et cetera. So it just comes naturally. Yeah. Mm.
And, you know, you also mentioned the effect that the COVID-19 pandemic has had on how boards have been equipped to deal with a crisis like this. Do you think that the boards in corporate Malaysia were well equipped to deal with something like this when it happened?
That's a good question. At the beginning of the crisis in March, we actually conducted a poll with board members to see how prepared they were for the crisis. Around 70% said that they had business continuity plans in place, they had a crisis management plan in place, and they were well equipped to deal with the crisis in that sense. But about 30% also said that in terms of their board members, they were not sufficiently experienced or they did not have enough experience to deal with the crisis. So the outcome of that poll was that there were quite a few areas that the respondents felt boards needed more training and more exposure to. And these were, you know, things like communication. So communication of how to deal with a crisis, engagement and communication with stakeholders, crisis management plans, human capital development, digitalization and innovation, risk and strategy. These were all areas which they felt there was still a lot of work that could be done to improve on in terms of the board competence and capability. So it was very clear, even though a lot of them felt that they were prepared to deal with the crisis, they felt there's still a lot more that could be done. Actually, if you look on a bigger scale in that sense, I mean, we work with a lot of partners in everything that we do. One of our global partners as well, I mean, this is Russell Reynolds Associates, had done a research study with the UN Global Compact. Now, UN Global Compact is a body which is trying to embed the SDGs, the Sustainable Development Goals, into corporates and into business. When they did this research, it was found that the best performing companies and the leaders in those companies, what they call sustainable leaders, their traits were that they were into disruption and innovation. They looked long term. and there was always diversity and inclusivity. So again, these are common elements that you see running, whether it's within Malaysia and outside of Malaysia. So I think there's a lot of focus on this now, as can be seen from the post-pandemic and narratives that you see now.
Right. We touched on this briefly earlier, but diversity and inclusion are becoming more and more spotlighted, especially when it comes to positions of leadership like boards as well. When it comes to diversity in boards, there have been many think pieces written about a lot of boards are male-dominated, for example. And as you mentioned, age is also another factor that boards also haven't quite yet reached a level of diversification with. And I think it would be disingenuous for us to be on Hervantage and not talk about the gender disparity in boards. Why do you think, in general, boards have been so reluctant to have female board members?
I hesitate to say that boards are reluctant as a general statement. I think there are a lot of boards out there, particularly in Malaysia. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of boards who are embracing it and looking at diversity overall, which will include gender as a business imperative, right? If you look at gender diversity, there's a lot of evidence to say that female-dominated companies, or in terms of domination, female membership on boards, which are dominated by women, actually perform financially a lot better than those that are not. When I say dominated, I mean in terms of sufficient mass. And this is where you have heard the 30% term come about. That's only because we're talking about sufficient mass, and we're saying that that's a minimum. It could be higher, but that's a minimum in order to get the benefits out of that. And there's a lot of evidence that shows that. That same evidence also points to total diversity. When there are more diverse companies, they generally perform better, right? And why is that? Because the thinking is different. There's less groupthink. There is more, engagement as such. For example, there's a study, I think, by the Harvard Review that mentions the traits of why boards which have more women on them actually, in terms of the corporate performance, perform better, because women generally, engage better. There's more collaboration. So that improves relationships between board members, between boards and management, for example. Secondly, women are more dogged, are more thorough. They will make sure they get answers to questions compared to men, for example. And thirdly, women reach out to more diverse stakeholders. Again, that's another point. And stakeholder engagement is so important now, and inclusion as well, of all your stakeholders is so important now. So these factors alone actually, explain why companies who are more diverse in terms of their board, in terms of their employee ratios, actually perform better. There's also evidence to show that companies where leaders are women, dominated by women and have majority women on their leadership, not only perform better, but, there's better employee engagement, less discrimination in that sense. They are more open, there's more, equality in terms of pay, et cetera, et cetera. So these are all very positive outcomes, and there's a lot of evidence on that.
Moving forward, what would be the next, I guess, rung of diversity to tackle when it comes to, managing boards?
Age, if you ask me. I think we need to bring down the average age of the pool of independent directors. Because with age as well, if you bring down the average age, as you get more younger directors on board, you obviously also look at a different skill set and a different mindset. So, that diversity of thought is there already as you do that. And I think that's another area we should focus on, and which we at ICDM are currently focusing on, because what we're doing now is we are focusing on what we call the pipeline of directors, i.e. the next generation of directors. We're trying to improve that pool of what we call non-executive or independent directors there, so that when we have targeted programs to develop whom we call aspiring directors. Now, these are very senior management who are very qualified. We actually screen them for board readiness, and a lot of them are very, very qualified and already ready to sit on boards. The only thing is they now need to get onto a board, right? So we actually screen them, put them through the motions, do profiling, do mentoring, put them through the relevant program so that, you know, from a skill set and competency point of view, we can upskill them. And we get them ready and eventually try and get them onto a board. And then we engage with corporates to see whether they will sponsor them onto a board. So we have a very targeted program to bring up that pipeline. And when we can get that into the pool, then that's that refreshment. Because on the other end of that, our other service is that we do board evaluations as well as board placement services. So when we do placement services for clients who approach us, we then are able to source from this pool, right? And we're able to then refresh the boards that are out there. So it's across the board service that we're doing here. So that's why our tagline is the one-stop center for all your needs. So across the board, we're providing this service where we're refreshing the pool out there and we're placing them on boards.
Right. Because it's like a work in progress, but at least there is progress in this field.
There is.
Fantastic.
And we see that as well in our clients. We're starting to see clients who are willing to accept these new candidates in there. Even though they may not have bought seats, they're willing to consider them. And that is such a huge start already.
That is so fantastic to hear. And I'm so glad that you are really spearheading this movement. So thank you very much for speaking to me today, Michelle.
Thank you so much, Christine. Thank you so much. And thank you for having me on the show.
All right. You've been listening to Her Vantage on BFM 89.9. If you've missed any of this interview with me, Christine Wong, and Michelle Kaif Lim, President and CEO of Institute of Corporate Directors Malaysia, you can download our app available on the Apple App Store and Google Play. You can also head over to our website, bfm.my/podcast, or you can get us on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. This is BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.